Today's episode is brought to you by RamShirts.com, the company that brought you Crush City Tees. Ram Shirts offers custom printed and embroidered apparel. They offer direct-to-garment printing for small runs and screen printing for larger runs. Follow them on Twitter and Instagram at RamShirts. Visit RamShirts.com for all your custom apparel needs. Without further ado, today's guest, former Major League Baseball pitcher and author Pat Combs.
Welcome to Astros Baseball, a podcast by a fan for the fans of the Houston Astros. Here is your host, Rob Fontenot.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning into this episode of Astros Baseball. Today I'm joined by former Major League pitcher and author of the book More Than the Score, Pat Combs. Pat, thanks for hopping on with me today.
Hey, Rob, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
So you were a former first-round pick, number 11 in the draft for the Phillies in 1988. I was a junior in high school. And this is the first thing I want to talk about. I didn't think this was like a not rare, whatever the opposite of rare is. I didn't know about this stat. I didn't even know it was something that even happened. But it's called a golden season. This is something I learned, you know, researching you. But you went from A-ball all the way to the majors in one season. You played at every level of baseball in one season. And that's pretty rare, right?
Yeah, it is. It's you know, I call it the right place at the right time, you know, with being drafted by the Phillies in 88. And it was in a situation where the Phillies needed pitching. You know, they had really traded away a lot of their young up-and-comers during their big playoff runs there in the mid-80s. Of course, you might remember when the Astros played them in 83 in the playoffs. But, yeah, that's what happened. So their minor league, you know, it was really struggling at that time. And when I got drafted, it was a pretty clear path to get to the big leagues quickly just because they needed some help. So it was a fun ride. I got drafted 88, played on the Olympic team that summer. So didn't start my official pro career till 89 and started in A-ball in Clearwater. Went to AA in Reading after a few weeks. Went to AAA in Scranton after a few months. And then was called up as a September call up in Philadelphia at the end of the season. So yeah, hit all the stops, and I was I guess the first player to do that. And then I think Andrew Jones, maybe Aaron Nola did it after me. But yeah, I get that distinction every once in a while. I see a question pop up on the screens in the big league ballparks, and who was the first player to do that? So I guess I become kind of a question at the ballparks now.
Yeah, I didn't even – something else I learned last year was – I think it was last year or the year before, but the immaculate inning, you know, where you just throw 9 pitches or something like that. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing until somebody did it. I think Will Harris did it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's been a few of those. Yeah, we had a – used to have a reward in the Phillies system up and down, you know, big leagues all the way down to the minor leagues. If you did that, the pitching coach would have to buy you a steak dinner. So that's a thing too.
You know, looking back at your minor league season there, you know, the A ball, you had a 1.30 ERA, triple A, you were 3-0 with a 0.37 ERA. And then, you know, you got the call up for the Phillies. You said it was September call up?
Yeah, of 89. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have here that you went 4-0 with a 2.09 ERA. So, man, what a season you had.
Yeah, that was something special. It really was. I had a great pitching coach when I was at Baylor, and Sid Hudson, a former big leaguer and big league coach as well, and just really, you know, refined me as a pitcher there in 2 seasons. And I was able to get drafted by the right team, the Phillies, that needed some help, and they just had a great season. You know, really felt like I was ready for it. You know, I'd played on the Olympic team in 88 that summer, and then 87 played on the USA team as well. So played against some of the top, you know, amateur competition in the world for 2 seasons. And that really got me ready. You know, it was one of those things where I felt mentally prepared to play at that level. Physically, certainly, I, you know, was throwing the ball well. But it just all kind of came together in 89. And so took that quick elevator right up to the big leagues. And then that September, had six starts. The Phillies, we won all six of those starts. I was 4-0, had a couple of no decisions, but we won those games as well. So, yeah, quickly became kind of the heir apparent, you know, according to the media in Philadelphia, the heir apparent to Steve Carlton. And I would never have made that comparison because I watched, you know, the Steve Carlton era when he and Nolan Ryan were battling for the leader, all-time leader for strikeouts. And so became a huge fan of Lefty when he was in his later years in Philadelphia. So, you know, to make that kind of comparison was very honoring, but also looking forward into my career thinking, you know, yeah, I've had a great ride, had a great start to my major league career, but, you know, got a long way to go before you can start calling me the next Lefty. So anyway, but it was a fun ride in 89, sure was.
So one thing to point out, since this is an Astros podcast, you actually went to high school in Houston, right?
Yeah, Rob, I was a huge Astros fan. I was a Astros buddy growing up, and, you know, followed the Astros religiously, and they were my team. So I was a little disappointed I didn't get drafted by the Phillies. I mean, by the Astros. They had a chance actually to draft me. They had the ninth pick in the draft that year, and they chose to go with a high school outfielder named Willie Ainsley. I think he had a short minor league career, had some injuries, and then never materialized for the Astros. But yeah, I had a little extra motivation when I was pitching against the Astros when I got to the big leagues, and of course those were the young killer bee years. So, you know, looked up to guys like Craig Biggio and Jeff Bagwell, and then they had the big hitter there, Glenn Davis, you know, and Alan Ashby. So that yeah. Huge Astros fans, and kind of a quick side story. Later on, after we moved back to Houston, you know, started going to church at Second Baptist there, and Craig Reynolds became a pastor at Second, and I was sitting there one day talking with Craig and said, "Man, you know, you were my Astros buddy when I was a young player." And you know, when you say that to older players, they kind of laugh, and you know, and of course, Craig said in his gracious way, "Yeah, you make me feel a little old, but I'm glad you chose me because it was a fun program. You know, you got to meet the player and get an autograph and things. But you know, those were some fun days growing up in Houston."
When you got drafted, that's like 88. I mean, there's no TV coverage of baseball draft. I mean, how did you find out? Just somebody just called you?
Yeah, that's exactly what happened back in those days. Yeah, there was no social media, no television coverage of the draft, and so. In fact, when the Phillies called me, they were one of the very few teams I had never heard from. Because usually, even back in the day, they would have you sign these player cards. And so they would collect, you know, your personal data, you know, and then they would obviously scout you. But most teams would contact you and have a discussion with you prior to the draft and just ask those questions like they still do today. You know, what from a monetary standpoint, what will it take to draft and sign you? And so I never heard from the Phillies, though. So when I got the call, it was a scout named Cotton Nye. And Cotton said, "Hey, you know, Cotton from the Phillies, I just want to let you know we drafted you and took you the 11th overall pick. So congratulations." I'm like, "Yeah, right. Who is this?" Right. I thought it was a buddy playing a trick on me. And he goes, "No, this is really Cotton Nye with the Phillies." That he had to say it like three or four times. It finally hit me like, I think this guy's really telling me the truth. I'm like, so I had to ask the question. I said, "Well, how come you guys never contacted me before the draft?" He said, "Well, that's just the way the Phillies choose to do things. We don't like to, you know, let the cat out of the bag in terms of who we're looking at to draft." And so it caught me a little bit by surprise, but sure glad it was the Phillies. I was able to obviously be with the team that needed some pitching and got me to the big leagues very quickly.
Out of high school, you ended up going to Baylor, where you were an All-American, and I don't know how many years later, but you're enshrined in their, I guess, Athletics Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that was a huge honor. Yeah, it was back in, I think it was 2011 was when I got inducted into the Baylor Hall of Fame.
And then the Seoul, the Olympic team, you won the gold medal. That has to be pretty awesome. Where are you displaying that at?
Well, the quick story about that, Rob, is that it was a demonstration sport in 88. So if you remember back when they first reintroduced baseball into the Olympics, it was 84 was the first team that that the USA team, when they, you know, participated, got the silver medal. And that was, you know, Jack Clark and Bobby Thigpen. That was a tremendous team. But in fact, when they compared us to the 84 team, we were the 88 team. It was often said by the college coaches that coached us even that the 84 team was more talented. But we put it all together and won the gold. And it was in Seoul that year, as you talked about. And so the story is that because it was a demonstration sport, they had to cut the roster size to 20 players. And there were three alternates and then two other coaches who didn't get the gold medal. So I don't have the gold medal, but we went back to Memphis, Tennessee, where we trained. They presented us with rings. So we all got a kind of a gold ring, you know, that signified the championship. But it was an incredible run, incredible time. And when I think back on my baseball career, man, no greater pride than putting the USA on my chest and playing for our country. And then obviously winning the first gold medal for America in the sport of baseball.
When your baseball career ended, did you have any idea what you wanted to do?
You know, I did. I had studied finance at Baylor and really thought ahead that if I were to make it in Major League Baseball and made a little money, I really needed to know how to take care of it, you know, and invest it correctly and budget and all that. So I really was interested in finance from my college days, and thankfully was surrounded by some really smart, you know, financial people, investment leaders, and learned it pretty well. So I was really intrigued by it and studied it hard. Even when I was playing, I was probably one of the few nerdy guys that would read the Wall Street Journal as we're on the team flights and stuff. But I always had an interest in that arena. And so when I got out, I transitioned into wealth management and have been in it ever since.
So also I see here behavioral analytics and consultants for numerous athletes, Major League Baseball and National Football League and corporate leaders. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, you know, when I get out of ball, one of the things that I was always intrigued about was the behavioral side of the game. You know, and when I played with the Phillies, we had such an incredibly talented team, Rob, but it was also made up of some characters, you know, guys like Lenny Dykstra and Darren Dalton, John Kruk, you know, to name a few. Mm. And, you know, it was as incredible a run as we did when we got to the playoffs in 93, we beat the Braves, got to the World Series, lost to Toronto. But looking back, I thought, man, we should have had a team that could have built a dynasty much like the Braves did in the 90s. And when I look back at that, you know, the things that really hurt us were the behaviors of certain players, you know, and on the field, some of these behaviors worked really well. You know, the hyper-competitiveness, kind of that win-at-all-cost mindset that a lot of the guys had. And then, but man, you take those same behaviors off the field and they were disastrous. And it really caused a number of those players to shorten their careers. You know, just the ability to have some self-control in some areas was really a problem. And so, again, I was always intrigued about the behavioral side of the game and ended up connecting with a company at that time was called the Flipping Group out of College Station. But the owner of the company, a guy named Flip Flippin of all names, he's one of the best people I've ever met and mentored me and just a tremendous leader in and of himself. But he took me through a profile, which was a behavioral focused profile. And it really got my attention because it not only was my assessment on myself of how I saw myself behaviorally, but then I would get, you know, six, seven people that knew me well, and they would also take the same profile. And it provided a lot of feedback in some areas that, you know, I needed to take a stronger look at and areas I needed to improve on. And as I began applying this in my life, I started seeing some changes. And I took that same tool to a guy that you'll probably recognize, the name Tom House. And Tom was obviously a big league pitcher, became later a coach, was Nolan Ryan's personal pitching coach after he and Nolan had hooked up with the Rangers up in Arlington. And then Tom built a company that really helped major league pitchers and NFL quarterbacks refine their skills and get better. When I showed it to Tom, I said, Tom, I'd love for you to take a look at this tool. I think it's very intriguing, but it really helped me to improve, and I want to get your take on it. Tom went through it and gave it to a couple of players. Tom Brady was one of them. And Tom's assessment was, you know, I remember the phone call, this was 23 years ago. He said, "Pat, where'd you get this tool?" I said, "Well, a guy in College Station." So he said, "Man, this is something I've been looking for my entire career. This is really going to help me speed up coaching these players and developing them. It kind of gives me an inside look at what's underneath the hood in their head. And this is really going to be helpful as we train and help mentor these pro athletes." So Tom and I just built a relationship and a process to run these guys through behavioral analysis and then give feedback and hold them accountable to some behaviors they were trying to improve. And then we took it to some major league clubs who ended up adopting that tool for their draft analysis. So I've been doing that for about 23 years now, and it's been great. We have a number of clubs that use it. We use it NFL Combine scout to help NFL scouts gather data, as well as major league scouts. So we work with a lot of scouting departments. But it's really a really good, strong player development tool. And that's where kind of that next gen of what we're taking, you know, to help coaches really understand their players better and help them coach up on the behavioral side.
Another thing you're doing is a baseball color analyst for college baseball. I see Fox, ESPN. You cover some games for Baylor. How'd that happen? I mean, you're doing a lot of stuff already.
I know, man. It's I'll say this. My life is not boring. And I've also been called, jack of all trades, master of none. I can wear that label proudly. The broadcasting thing almost came about by mistake. It was a friend of mine named Ron Thulin. Ron had been involved with Fox Sports and still is, does a lot of college football and basketball. But Ron got assigned a college baseball game back in 2012. And he called me and said, "Hey, I just got assigned a Fox game of the week. It's Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, the Bedlam game in Okie City. I'm looking for a color guy." And I thought he was asking me, "Who do I know?" So I start reeling off names. He goes, "Pat, I'm not asking about guys you know. I want you to do the game with me." I'm like, "Well, Ron, I'm not a broadcaster. I don't know anything about it." And he said, "No, we're just going to talk baseball. You can do that." And I said, "Yeah, I can talk baseball." But he got me on the broadcast. And about halfway through the game, Ron pulled his headphones off. I thought he was upset about something I had said. And he, this is between innings. He said, "Man, you're a natural at this. You need to continue doing this." I'm like, "Dude, I don't know if I have time to do this. I'm coaching my kids, but you know, what does all this entail?" Well, Fox Sports gave me a call after the game and said, "Hey, we'd like to sign you to a contract and cover the Big 12 next year." And so that kind of launched into covering Big 12 baseball. And then Baylor started doing their own broadcasts and, of course, started working with the Baylor team. And it's just been a blast, Rob. I really enjoyed it. It is a hobby. I take it seriously, but it's just a lot of fun. The way I look at it now is I get people that actually pay me to sit behind a mic and talk about baseball at some of these great college games. And it's just been a blast. I've had a lot of fun with it.
All right, now let's move on to your book, your new book, More Than the Score. What was your motivation for this?
My motivation really goes back to when I was coaching my own sons. I had three sons, Carson, Connor, and Casey, the three C's. It was just such a blast coaching those guys when they were young and playing in various youth sports, you know, not just baseball. They picked up football, basketball, whatever's in season. My oldest son became a hockey player and then played collegiately. And then my younger two sons, Connor and Casey, both played baseball at East Texas Baptist in college. And then my youngest son, Casey, was drafted by the Marlins as a catcher in their organization. So this was a culmination of just going back into my career and the fun that we had growing up and me being able to be their dad, coach, but then also being, you know, on the sidelines. I didn't know anything about hockey. So my wife and I were hockey parents, and basketball parents. I didn't coach basketball, but, just the fun that we had. And I think the motivation for me, Rob, was seeing how much youth sports has changed over time to where, you know, when you and I were growing up, I think the emphasis was more so on having fun, you know, playing with your buddies, being in a community. You know, I remember the Little League All-Star games that we had growing up were just fabulous. I mean, the communities for each Little League would show up, and it was just a great community-oriented sport. And it was all about having fun and enjoying the game. And now it seems like the culture in youth sports has shifted to it's this win-at-all-cost mentality, and I've got to help my kid, you know, get this Division I scholarship. or help them get to pro ball or become a pro golfer, whatever it is, right? And so it's just been a culture shift, and I've seen some deterioration in terms of just the perspective of youth sports. You know, when parents are yelling and screaming at coaches and umpires, and it's just taking the joy out of the game, and then you see coaches acting like knuckleheads on the field and assaulting umpires. It's just to me that the whole shift here has been negative. And you know, I wanted to refocus parents back onto the idea that what sport has really been designed for, and where I think God gave us sport as a gift, was in helping your kids to focus on character and virtue and learn the great skills that sports can teach us. You know, you not only think about the physical things that are helpful in development for children, but you think about all the social things that they learn, the leadership development, the character, the, you know, learning how to win with a dignity and grace, and learning how to lose that way, and just the interactions with coaches and learning how to accept feedback and put things into practice. So it's, to me, there's just so many life skills that can be developed in our kids that will last them way beyond the game and way beyond the time that they have in sports. And for me, when I look back on my career, Rob, I'm so thankful God gave me the ability to pitch and you know, I had a great left arm and I got to play in the big leagues, and it was a blast. But the things I learned from the game that have carried on with me as a business person, you know, in terms of giving back, of having a leadership mindset of, it's not about me, it's about serving the greater good of the community and my teammates and the people I get to work with daily. And those things cannot be replaced. And those are the skills that we get to learn participating in sports. So let's focus back on those things and build our kids up and encourage them, let them enjoy the game. That to me is the most important part. So really, it's just kind of a shift of perspectives and how parents and coaches are looking at the game and how we're using it with our kids.
When I was a kid playing baseball, we played for our school in the summer. We didn't really play for the school, but somehow I guess they provided the uniforms. And we played with our friends. We played with the guys in our neighborhood. We played with our friends from school. And, you know, we would get upset if we lost. But, you know, 5 minutes later, we're getting suicides, you know, from the Coke machine, and we're over it. You know, we're just having fun. You remember getting suicides?
Oh, man. Oh, our baseball coach would take us into the basketball court, and we would do those suicides. And it was until somebody threw up, we had to do it.
Well, what I'm talking about is after the game, our coach would take us to get sodas. And a suicide was getting every soda.
Oh, man. That suicide. That's a way better suicide.
Yeah. We didn't get punished. No, it wasn't like that. But it was fun. I mean, baseball was fun. And now I see, I mean, I have friends that have kids, and they're at tournaments every weekend. You know, they're traveling everywhere and spending all this money. And I'm like, you're way better parent than I am, because I don't think I would do that. I mean, okay, son, you want to do that? Well, get a ride with somebody else, because I got a life to live, and go and watch you play baseball every weekend, it's not what I want to do. But I'll watch you one season. I mean, you know, we played football, then we played basketball, we wrestled, we ran track, we did everything. And it seems like these guys are just, I don't know, I think they're just taking it too serious. So it's good that someone, you know, is pointing this out to people, and hopefully they read it and learn something.
Yeah, well, Rob, well, thanks for that. You're dead on, man. It's, you know, it's difficult, because look, as a parent, we want the best for our kids. I've never run into a parent that says, yeah, I want my kid to fail. Our kids are going to fail naturally. It's what we do with it. But I think the major point of this is, you know, very, very few kids are ever going to get the shot to play even high school sports, right? And even beyond that, you think of college and then the next level to pro sports. I mean, it's like you look at the 40 million kids across America that are involved in youth athletics, 0.001% of them will get a chance to play at the highest level. So if that's your goal for your kids, that I want my kid to become the next Tiger Woods or LeBron James, or even your mindset is, I want my kid to get the Division I scholarship, or, you know, I want my kid to be the best starter on his high school team. If that's your goal, that is a misplaced goal. And you're going to be very, very disappointed with the outcome. If your goal is, I want my kid to enjoy sports, I want him to learn all the things we just talked about in terms of character development and virtue, and I want them to be coached by terrific coaches who understand the game but also treat the kids with dignity and respect, if that's your goal, you're going to be really, really pleased with the outcome. And so I think it really goes, it's a perspective shift, right? And you're right, Rob, today, this whole select club sports thing has just gotten so far out of hand. It used to be 15 years ago, the elite players would play select ball, and there's a need for it. I'm not saying don't play select baseball or select sports. I'm saying get a really strong evaluation of your kids before you do that, because you're exactly right. Your friends, being pulled away every weekend with chasing these trophies and going to all these different tournaments, there's a need for that for the very elite players. But for probably 90% of the players, man, just let them enjoy the game in recreational leagues. And if they want to play some competitive tournaments, maybe you pick up two or three in a summer. But man, way too many parents are getting their kids involved in club sports, and they are getting jerked around in terms of the financial obligations. And I've got this part in my book, when you sit down and start doing the budget, you know, and it goes something like this, Rob. Your kid will be playing one day at some local rec league. The phone rings. Hey, we've been watching your kid play. We think he can play select ball, and we want him to come on our, you know, super crazy awesome team that goes around and wins all these tournaments. So to sign up for our team, it's going to cost you $2,500. It's going to cost you another $800 for their uniforms, because we always, you know, we always order three different uniforms for our kids. We want to look like a big league team. And then, oh, by the way, your equipment's going to cost you another $500. We always get it embroidered, right? Kids have all their names and everything. And then we're going to go to these best tournaments in the world every summer. You're going to spend about $7,000 to $8,000 trailing your kids around, hotels, food, you know, tournament fees. So by the time you're done with the summer league, you're out $10,000, and you've had all these promises about how your kid's going to become the next LeBron, and you're sitting back going, now why did I do this? Right? So it is getting crazy. But yeah, I think that's where parents just have to kind of settle things down, really think through, you know, first of all, is my son or daughter, have they been given the talent to play at that elite level? If they have, maybe there's a reason to chase some of those things. But, you know, most parents have the rose-colored glasses on and can't really properly assess their kids. So you just got to be careful in terms of what you're doing with your son and daughter. And if all they have is talent to play rec league or maybe a slightly, you know, higher competitive level above that, man, let them enjoy the game. Let them play in their community. Don't spend all these thousands of dollars chasing your kids around, the country on these weekend tournaments.
Yeah, you talked about having the talent. That's one of my questions. These guys are paying, you know, $25,000, $3,000, whatever you were saying. I mean, there's kids that are really good that their parents can't afford to do this. So these guys running around doing all these tournaments, they're not necessarily the best players, you know. And so the parents putting all this money out, they may be having higher expectations for their kid, and then their kid's not really that talented.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's where we've seen this explosion in select teams and club teams. I'll just give you a quick example, Rob, because I still coach summer league baseball. We've got a group called the Dallas Patriots, very successful organization. You know, we're usually top 10 in the country every summer, and we compete in the biggest tournaments now. So that's why I say there's a purpose for those elite level type teams. But 15 years ago, we started playing in a tournament called Perfect Game. They have their big national tournament in Atlanta every year. 15 years ago, there were about 75 teams that participated in that tournament. And it was the best teams from across the country. I mean, we played teams from California, Florida, you know, the Midwest. I mean, they brought some of the best ball players across the country. These were all the kids that were going to play Division I baseball, maybe some junior college kids. But they were future D1 guys, maybe even future draft picks. And it was super competitive. Fabulous baseball. I fast forward you to last year before the pandemic year. And the summer before, there were 420 teams entered in this tournament. And the quality was just not very good. I mean, you have to win a bracket to get into the championship tournament. Of course, all the major, you know, teams that are really good get into that bracket. But we were beating teams like, you know, 24-1, you know, 15-2. I mean, they just weren't very good teams, but their parents had signed them up, paid all these fees, paid the travel fees. and they got to say, my kid plays for the Houston whatever, right? Or yeah. the Dallas Storm or whatever, right? To go play in this big tournament. And they really were a team of rec league kids. And I'm not putting that down. I'm just saying, boy, that's a huge investment for your kid to sign up and play at that elite level, and they just don't have the talent. And then you're going to be out all this money. And it's just gotten kind of crazy in that way. And so again, going back to the book, I'm hoping to give parents a perspective about this, but also be prepared. When your kids do have talent, celebrate that, you know, get them on a select team or a club team, because they are going to face great competition. They will be able to get seen by college scouts and pro scouts. There is a place for that, but man, let's figure out our why. You got to answer that question of why am I doing what I'm doing with my son or daughter? And is it a fit? Is it the right fit for them to go do these things?
Yeah. I mean, you take your kid to the tournament with 420 teams and they get demolished. I mean, you have to think, I wasted a lot of money. And what you're talking about earlier, all those fees, it seems like somebody has turned this youth baseball into some sort of big business. I mean, someone's got to be making money. Is it the guys creating the teams?
You nailed it, Rob. And that's the thing we're seeing, right? There's a lot of money going into youth sports these days, where it's just, that's what's changed, right? And you're exactly right. The coaches, the organizations that are being built. And look, I think some of these guys do it for the right reasons. They want to coach kids. They want to, you know, train them up and help them, you know, learn the right skills. But that's what's happening. There's an explosion in these select club organizations, and it's a money game. They're just chasing the dollar. And when you get somebody calling you saying, hey, we're recruiting your kid to play for our, you know, select group, you know, the first thing you think about the parent, wow, finally, somebody noticed my talented son or daughter, right? Why did it take this long, right? So they just feed your ego. And so what I'm asking parents to do is really think through, you know, are your kids talented? If they are, great. Celebrate that. Move them on to some select club game. Be ready for the costs. You know, it's going to cost you a lot. It may not be for everybody. And I do want to say this, Rob, because I think parents need to hear this. If your child is good enough, if they have talent in whatever sport they're playing in, they will be found. They don't have to play club ball, and you don't have to give into that pressure. I promise you, if there's a talented baseball player or softball player in high school and they're not part of a club team and they're putting up numbers in high school, I promise you college coaches are going to talk to that high school coach. Your kid will be seen and be found. So there's not, you don't need to have the pressure of my child has to play in select or club ball to get seen. That is a lie. But a lot of parents buy into it. They just don't know. It's this kind of a pride thing as well, but it shouldn't be about us. It shouldn't be about us as parents. What's in the best interest of my son or daughter? What are they talented to do? What gifts and talents do they have? And how do we nurture them best to help them at whatever competitive level they're at? And that's where we have to get a better perspective in terms of what we're doing with our kids in the youth sports game.
All right. So the book is More Than the Score, How Parents and Coaches Can Cultivate Virtue in Youth Athletics. If you don't have anything else to add, I think you summed it up pretty good there at the end.
Well, Rob, thanks a bunch, man. I'll just say this. It does have a lot of stories about our family. Some of the things that we did really well, some of the things that we didn't do so well. So we just opened it up. My wife and I both thought, you know, we want to share our experiences with people and let them just to kind of take the ride with us. So that's it, man. I appreciate it. It's been fun. And I hope some folks will go out and get the book. I think it'll be helpful, especially if you have a kid participating in youth athletics.
Yeah, we talked earlier. We're going to try to keep it at 30 minutes. And I'll tell you this, Pat, I could talk to you for like 2 hours.
Oh man. Well, Rob, we'll do it again. Yeah. If you have a slot, I'd be glad to come back on. It's been a joy to be with you. And thanks again for the opportunity to join you today.
All right. Thanks for coming on. And thanks you guys for listening. Today's episode of Astros Baseball. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Astros Baseball. Make sure to subscribe so that way you will be alerted when there is a new episode. Follow Rob on Twitter @RobFontenot.